Well, beautiful playing there, and has been described as deserving of a Nobel Prize nomination. It doesn't come higher than that when it comes to accolades. Anyhow, that's a nice way to introduce our guest on Classic Drive today. And of course, he was our featured artist all last week. Christopher O'Reilly, a very welcome to Classic Drive.
Lorcan, such an honour to be with all of you and to be back in Ireland, albeit virtually.
Yes, a little bit of a delay, of course, because we're talking to you live from Los Angeles. Mind you, it's 5:10 here. What time is it there at the moment?
Oh, it's just after 9 a.m. We're just getting an early start, which I love.
All right, good. As long as we didn't get you out of bed, so then you are an early riser.
Yes, indeed.
Listen, first of all, congratulations on this album, The Well-Tempered Clavier Book 1 of Johann Sebastian Bach. And it wasn't your first, by the way, delve into the works of Bach.
Well, no, I've been playing Bach all my life, but the Goldberg Variations are the thing that's probably friendliest to pianists. And I was working on the Goldbergs for some concerts in 2017, and we always get to the end of working on some Bach and come to the realization that there's no composer that we learn more from than Bach. And I came to the end of those concerts and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm bereft, you know, what can I do? And I realized I'd done really only obligatorily a handful of the preludes and fugues. And so I decided to make a survey of both books. And so I embarked on this incredible journey. And with the help of a scholar from Dublin, well, not from Dublin, he was born in Croydon, Joseph Grucock, but was a lecturer at the music department of Trinity College Dublin, and he wrote a beautiful pamphlet outlining the structure and analysis of all of the fugues of the Well-Tempered Clavier. And then one of his students, David Ledbetter, wrote the incredible survey and analysis of all the preludes and fugues of the Well-Tempered Clavier. Those were the two books that were the most inspiring in terms of really delving into the analysis of them. But what really brought me to the project, Lorcan, was working on the Goldbergs and listening to all of those great Nicholas Harnoncourt recordings on the Deutsche Grammophon Bach 300 survey of all of his works, and reading John Elliott Gardner's book, Musical in the Castle of Heaven, in which he talked about his touring of all the cantatas. And I had this light bulb moment when I realized that Bach, like Schubert, and I think to a certain extent Mozart, and even Brahms with all of his choral music, Bach was primarily a composer of vocal music, primarily a composer for the most expressive instrument ever known. Mm. And so I started thinking about it in terms of, well, if he, you know, when he sat down at the keyboard, did he leave his heart at the door? Or did he mean this to be as much of an expressive enterprise as all of his other music? And I came to the realization that, you know, instead of having this kind of long, short Morse code idea of piano articulation, there should be as many articulations as there are consonants in any sung language, and as many ways of connecting or discerning or, you know, distinguishing one sound from another as there are ways of breathing. And so off I went and studied and made a survey, and actually came up with a real, I think it's a real method for the study of Bach. I did lectures, meditations on each prelude and fugue. There were about 100 videos in all, and I called it Everything We Need to Know About Playing the Piano We Learned from the Well-Tempered Clavier. And in fact, yes, everything that I learned from the Bach has altered all of my playing of all other musics, including Radiohead, by the way. But you can see all that stuff on YouTube at Christopher O'Reilly 360.
Well, it's funny you mention Radiohead, and actually just on the strength of what you're saying, all of that, I gather it was, when you said you spent 3 years going through this, that it has taken that long to focus on this Bach works, the Clavier 1 and 2. It must have been so fulfilling for you, because you've performed Liszt and Schumann, you've delved into the classical world, but to spend this length of time, you were completely absorbed by this.
Absolutely, and actually, as I say, it's really affected all of my playing, and I'm continuing to work on it. I've not yet recorded book two, but I'm working through the Preludes and Fugues every day. I do probably six a day, and every time I go through the whole 48, Lorcan, I'm learning something new, or there's some new focus that I've got. Some bee in my bonnet about the whole thing. Yeah.
Okay. We can't wait for a book two then, because it was such a great reaction to book one right through the week, and I was quoting just some of the wonderful critiques, you might say, of your work now in the book one, and it really was amazing. Who's that in the background, by the way?
Oh my God, that's Aurora, our King Charles Spaniel. She's all the way upstairs, but she's barking at the birds. I'm sorry about that. That was the hardest part of the recording session, Lorcan, because my wife was upstairs. We recorded it here on my wife's beautiful Bösendorfer in our living room. Oh, yes. And Catherine was in charge of keeping Aurora, away from licking me and the producer and keeping her quiet. So.
And you must have a great relationship with your wife. She lets you play the piano, her treasure possession, just when you mentioned it there.
Yes, we've actually just put new hammers on the Bösendorfer. This is a Bösendorfer she's had since 1985, wow. And we played on the original hammers. Lorcan, I'm a longtime Steinway fanatic. And when we were courting, I would be at my house, less than a mile away here in Hollywood, and I'd be playing on my Steinways, and then I'd come over and play for her. And I realized I was really driving the Bösendorfer too hard. There was no reason not to revel in the extraordinary flexibility of touch and sound that the Bösendorfer has. It's very easy to be seduced by just the generous outpouring of warmth and sound that the Steinway has to offer, but there's so much more subtlety available on the Bösendorfer.
All right, well, look, I wanted to ask you, you just tipped on something there, and it just sparked something. When recording, the Bach, you were talking about the vocals, or the vocalizing the work. And it's really the other way around then with Radiohead, because Radiohead, there were songs written, and you transcribed those to wonderful instrumental versions. Giving the whole feeling of the song. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Does it not feel like a completely different beast when you're doing that, or is there a direct association? Considering you did the Radiohead back in 2003, maybe, it was when I first came across it, and here you are doing what I call the other way around now, if you like.
Right. Well, it's funny, Lorcan, because there were a couple of things about the lyric impulse that, looking back on it, even before 2003, when True Love Waits came out, I was listening to the takes, and we were trying to figure out which ones to use, and there were some that it was quite clear I was very keen on the beat. Okay, and then there were others that I seemed to sense more of a focus on the lyric line, and those are of course the ones that we ended up using. And then fast forward, all this many years later, and I think one of the most important lessons that I learned from my cohorts, my young colleagues on my NPR program, I've hosted for 20 years a program called From the Top, which was essentially a national platform for pre-college classical musicians. And I would be playing with prodigies, five a week, for 20 years. And one of the lessons that I learned from them was that, we'd be playing a Wieniawski concerto or something. They'd be, going like mad on the violin. And then we would get to the cadenza, and they would be asked to do even more demanding technical things and leaps and octaves and chords. And I reminded them that At that point in the concerto, the cadenza, you know, you're on your own. The composer is saying, you are in this moment the master of time and space. And so I took my own best advice and it's just not a matter of self-indulgence, but really, you know, just a split second to make that octave really sing rather than just, you know, kind of making it. And I realized, Lorcan, even in the very kinetic, tempo-driven pieces that, like the Beethoven Concerti, that even outside the cadenzas, there are still moments, you know, a measure here and a measure there, that Beethoven again cuts away, you know, the orchestra is gone and you are no longer coordinating with the conductor. You are there, you know, the master of space and time. And so extrapolate that one more time to the whole idea of solo music, when we are absolutely responsible for the fabric of space and time in every moment. And so that led me to, you know, to greater freedom and really manifesting that moment. And playing my Radiohead concerts and again playing them solo and not being so concerned about the beat and just giving the audience that sense that, you know, the care that's going into the sculpting of time, no, rather than the keeping of time, really, really comes across in an instinctive, archetypal kind of way.
And can I ask you, just when you mentioned the Radiohead concerts and that, did Tom York or Johnny Greenwood, did they ever turn up at the concerts, or had you a relationship with them?
I met them a couple of times. I went backstage when I saw them at Madison Square Garden just after the record came out, the first record came out. And I immediately met Colin Greenwood and introduced myself. He said, oh, we know who you are, and we're so thrilled with what you're doing. And then I met and had a long talk with Tom York. It was just amazing, you know, talking to this genius, you know, about music that we both loved. And he said, you know, I said, you know, I'm actually working on a version of Lift. You know, there was the original 1992 version, and then there's another one that they had just released in 2003. I said, I'm sticking more to the early version. He says, oh, that's good, because the new one's crap. And he was very self-deprecating. I said, you know, I was working on Pyramid Song, which I feel is the most quintessential piano vocal song of Radiohead. I said, I couldn't imagine doing it without the sound of his voice. And he said, oh, you mean without me effing it up, he said. So he was very, very self-deprecating man, and we loved speaking with him. And then there again, Lorcan, you know, the latest, well, it's not a terribly new record now, but A Moon-Shaped Pool, you can hear that they're no longer, you know, doing this to a click track. You know, this is really, you know, rubato singing and playing, a lot of it, you know, just piano vocal. Yeah. And so they again, are not constrained by some cosmic metronome, some cosmic beatbox.
Yeah. I was dying to know if they had heard you playing the music live and that when you went along to see them as well. But look, before we go, because I want to play, if you don't mind, I'd love to play maybe No Surprises by Radiohead, your interpretation.
One of my favorites. That would be a wonderful way to end. Yes, thank you, Lorcan.
This is from Hold Me to This, by the way, you're Rob.
Yes.
Now, before I let you go, you cannot get away being on national radio here in Ireland not comment or tell us where the O'Reilly comes from.
O'Reilly comes from, the middle southwest. Where is it that all the good china comes from? I'm forgetting.
There's Baleek, which is the County Meath. Waterford.
No. The dishware, not the crystal, but the dishware. I'm not remembering now. Baleek.
I'd be shot now if there's another, actually. But anyhow, you'll put me on the spot.
Well, and here's the other thing. You know, I'm very, you know, I'm sort of chastened to say, you know, the name, the way my name is spelled, O'Rileyy. Of course, it's nothing, you know, to the original, you know, which is probably, you know, R-E-I-L-E-G-A, you know, just amazingly, you know, Gaelic and wonderful. But the name, the spelling of my name came about because of, you know, two of the uncles who had a horrible fight and decided to change the spelling of the name so they'd never have anything to do with each other again.
There's always an argument in it, isn't there? Change the name. Well, look, it's lovely to talk to you. And can I just say, without going over the top, there was a superb reaction to your playing and your album last week. So we can't wait for the continuation and the Clavier Book 2.
Oh, I can't wait myself, Lorcan. And I'm so grateful and so gratified to have my Irish listeners so enthusiastic about this project. It's you know, to do a monument of this, but to have people, you know, just respond so wholeheartedly and respond, you know, to the personalization and intimacy and immediacy of this performance is greatly, greatly gratifying. I thank you.
Well, I'll let you back to the sunshine then and your orange juice at 9 in the morning.
All right, yes.
All right, well...
thanks, Lorcan.
Again, Christopher O'Rileyy, thank you very much. And from your album, Hold Me to This, as you play Radiohead, No Surprises.